Let DoD reporter Jared Serbu take you inside the DoD reporter's notebook. Insights and tidbits important to the armed services and the defense contractors who serve them, delivered right to your inbox. Sign up at federalnewsradio.com. Search alerts.
Hello and welcome to yet another edition of Columbia Technology Partners Ready to Prime on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the program that will give you the tools necessary to become a successful government contractor. We're going to talk to the right people. We're going to read the right news. We're going to point you in the right direction, you, Mr. Small Business Owner, to get you well on your way to government contracting both above and below the Potomac River. There are a lot of people on this journey we plan on introducing you to. One person you want to impress, keep on your good side, and overall make a good impression to would be the contracting officer, the COR. In the Department of Defense. That person can make you a happy person or could just completely ruin your day based on your actions. I have one here who has retired now, a little less than a year. About a year, she's saying. She's motioning to me. Her name is Mary Ostman. I dragged her out of the pool to come in and discuss her past life as a COR with the Department of Defense. Mary, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
So tell me, what, just in a nutshell, what was your role with the Department of Defense? Tell me what a COR does.
Well, I was the contracting COR, mm-hmm. and I ran contracts, basically. Okay. So I dealt with the COs and the requirements side of things for the government and writing contracts, proposals, sitting on evaluation teams.
Was it an accurate statement for me to say this is someone you want to definitely keep on your good side?
The COR?
Yeah.
A good COR can see through the BS. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you have a job to do. You're restricted by government regulations, the FAR, the DFAR, which mm-hmm. is the Bible for a COR. The main thing that I tried to keep in mind was it had to be fair for the government and for the contractor.
Did you ever have an opportunity to remove someone?
Absolutely.
What would be the criteria for getting someone removed? How would you go about making sure that that happened? And would there be a warnings process up to that point?
Well, the biggest thing with the COR's job is you have to have eyes everywhere.
Right.
So you can't just sit at a desk. You have to go places. You have to talk to people. And you have to know your mission. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not a case of somebody coming to you and saying, oh, I need a web developer. Well, what do you need a web developer to do? I need to make sure I get the right person in the right job and make sure that I'm going to meet the mission need.
Okay.
And that's the biggest thing. So you will know and you will hear your tech reps. They'll come to you and say, this guy's just not up to par, or something like that. And the COR then goes back to the PM on the contracting side and talks to them. A good COR will give somebody a couple chances, give mm-hmm. the contractor an opportunity to get that person trained. Technology changes so fast, so rapidly, that you're not going to find the latest and greatest that just came out. Not somebody we can afford.
Right.
A good point was when SharePoint came out. They mm-hmm. were hard to find people, very hard to find. But we needed that in there. And we just kept searching. Or we got, you know, a contractor to train somebody specifically for that.
That was going to be my next question. Will you accept, and I know you will, having been in the role for a little while, I understand that you will accept training, but this show is for the small business who's ready to prime, get to that point. Looking to break in and get to be able to talk to you and others, you are willing to accept training or willing to let people train them to get up to that role.
Absolutely. Okay. It's not the government's responsibility to train somebody.
Right.
If you're a good small business, you know what's coming down the pike. And especially in the government world, you know, you've got eyes and ears everywhere. So you basically know what the government's going to be coming and looking for.
Right.
So, you know, and I realize that small businesses have a hard time because your overhead and your revenue is not as large as a big company.
Right.
And that's why we tried to make in our contracts that we knew were going to be large contracts and a large contractor would have to get it. We tried to put a percentage that had to go to small business. So we kind of like worked with it.
Sure, sure.
And I always made sure that every quarter I got the small business report to forward onto the Small Business Administration to show that we were meeting or exceeding our expectations.
That was my next question. Yeah. Did you typically meet or exceed? What are the repercussions if it's not met?
Well, it affects your award fee.
Sure.
If you're not meeting, because that's stated in the contract, that you will have a certain percentage of small business on your contract. And that's what I expected. When you put a bid in on a contract and you tell me, yes, I can do this, I expect you to live up to that. And those were my expectations. This is what I asked for. You told me you could do it. Now you need to perform.
How many small businesses did you deal with on a regular basis? Or was it typically the prime that you always spoke to, the big guy?
I typically spoke to the prime, but I have so many people I know that are in small business.
Yeah.
So, well, you look at you. I bet you had a Cavs game,
for
God's sake.
This is true.
I mean, that's the way it goes. I mean,
would you, in meeting people like me and others, would you take their stories back to the office? You know, the struggles
sure.
that they may be having
sure.
and address them?
You're not the only people that are in a learning process.
Right, right, exactly.
So, you know, we can go back and we can say, well, you know, here's what I heard when you're dealing with the CO and the PEOs mm-hmm. and talking to them about your next contract that comes up. And every day it was something new.
You're listening to Columbia Technology Partners Ready to Prime right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Alan Scott. My guest is Mary Ostman, 30-year veteran of the Department of Defense as a COR, contracting officer. And did you ever see yourself in that role?
No, I started out in the typing pool.
So what led you to that, I'm doing the air quotes here, cutthroat world of contracting?
I kind of fell into it. I was I worked 20 years out in the travel section and went from CONUS to overseas to doing the director's travel and everything, and just wanted something new. And I kind of slid. I was taken over to IAD to do their travel mm-hmm. and then slid right into the contracting world.
Did you find it as rewarding or more rewarding?
Loved
more challenging?
It.
Okay.
Loved it.
Okay.
Loved it.
What advice would you have to someone in that role right now? Do you have anything? Do you see, as you were leaving, were there any changes that you were like, you know what? If I was staying, I'd say something. But instead, I'm just going to let it be.
My biggest problem is the government puts people into the COR roles who have no experience. And yes, you have to learn, but I think they should be sitting side by side with somebody who's experienced. Because like I said, every day it's something different.
Right.
Every day you have a problem. It's like a 20-minute workout all day long because so many different things pop up.
Give me an example of a problem as best you can. I realize a lot of them are probably classified problems, but
no, they're not. They're it's like adult daycare. I mean, that's what I kind of call it, is adult daycare, because you're in charge of all these people. I mean, some of these contracts have 350 people on them.
Right.
So I can't take care of 350 people in one day, but my phone certainly can.
Sure.
And it rang off the hook.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would have contractors watching other contractors and keeping track of time, and you can't do that. And I want to tattle on them for this, or I want to tattle on them for that. Your biggest friend on a contract is a COR, but be realistic. It's not your job to go in there and watch other people. If you see something blatantly illegal, mm-hmm. time card fraud or something like that, say something to the government lead and just say, you know, I saw this, and let them take it from there. We've had sexual harassment cases. We had one guy pulled the smoke alarm. I mean, like I said, adult daycare,
right.
But, you know, some of it is good stuff too, you know, like one of the problems that the COR has is you're stuck in the middle. You've got the CO who's following the company lines, and then you've got the contractors on the other side. So we're getting hit from both sides.
Right.
We have to try and see how the CO that you have right now is interpreting the FAR and the contract and what is coming down the pike, whereas a contractor could see it a whole different way. You could get a new CO in the middle of your contract who interprets the FAR a different way than the CO you started with. So you have to switch gears and try and work around all that. So it's a constant ebb and flow.
You're like the negotiator between the two.
Totally.
Totally the negotiator.
Totally the negotiator.
Would you, there's a standard protocol, I would imagine, for following the chain of command. How would you feel if someone were to go around you?
It depends on the issue. If I'm not there and they need to go to the CO, go.
Yeah.
But if I'm there and I always tried to be available, then come to me.
Yeah.
Let me solve the problem. Let me try and get it solved. If I can't solve it, I will elevate it.
The world
and
of,
I always kept my CO informed every on everything.
The world of contracting, especially within the Department of Defense, has changed dramatically from the time that you began, I'm sure.
Yes.
For the good or for bad?
I can only speak from my experience.
Sure. Well, you were there for a while.
Well,
so,
yeah, I was. But I think one of the things I have a problem with is the rigidity that they've gone into. I mean, you have instances within the DOD. I'm not speaking in SA.
Sure.
I'm talking DOD,
mm-hmm.
where somebody did something illegal. And then it just flows across DOD, and we're impacted by what they encountered,
mm-hmm.
such as, you know, you have these huge contracts where they're building airplanes and everything else. Well, somebody took a bribe. I don't build airplanes at NSA. I never did.
Right.
We're there, butts in seats, doing a job. It's a specific job. They come down the pike and they say, you know, now we have to do cost plus contracts, which totally blows our budget out of the water. And, you know, we do 5-year budgets.
Right.
Well, say something happens in the third year of what you went forward and got your money for, and all of a sudden now they're making you do cost plus contracts and you don't have that money.
Yeah.
So the scope of your contract has to get smaller. The amount of people you expected to get gets smaller because you don't have the money.
Right.
I think the other thing that they need to look at again as a money saving issue is time and materials. You know, when you have somebody that you expect, like let's take the ops floor, for example. Those are shift work.
Mm-hmm.
I need a butt in the seat. I need them doing a specific job. Why can't they be time and materials? I don't need to go cost plus on that.
Right.
It could even be firm fixed price.
Right.
I think they need to start rethinking the type of contract they're going to use. I also know that with time and materials, I can get, when you ask me to cost out for the next year, I can cost it to the penny.
Sure.
Because it's negotiated rates. So I knew exactly what my budget was going to be for the next year. And that made it easy. Cost plus, I couldn't even begin to tell you. I could take a stab in the dark. And then, you know, of course, when my budget came in, how many people would I have to let go?
Right. I'm glad you brought that up because there was, during your time there, you were there during the sequester.
Correct.
And a lot of faces disappeared as a result. I know how it impacted the government contractor being on the outside. What did that do to the morale of the staff inside and you specifically? Were you...
It was a headache.
Yeah.
You know, you've got people's lives in your hands and there's nothing you can do. So you got to look at it from a livelihood standpoint. You know, these people are going to be sent home.
Right.
Well, shoot, I was sent home.
Right.
You
so
know?
You were.
Oh,
sent-
absolutely. I wasn't essential personnel. If I don't have any people working, what am I going to do?
Good point.
So, you know, it affected a lot of people, and that's not the biggest problem. Your first and foremost thought when you're working out there is my mission. You know, I'm concerned about boots on the ground. If I'm sending contractors home, who's helping them?
Good point.
Our whole purpose out there is to defend the warfighter. You can't do that when you have a sequester. You can't do that when you got a CRA. You can't do that when your budget's been cut. And there's so many products coming out just monthly that we not only have to maintain the legacy stuff, because we can't get rid of it until we make sure that the new stuff actually works. Then you have to figure out the interoperability between both. It's an ongoing headache, but it's so challenging, and it was good. It was good.
Were those interoperability challenges things that were faced up front, or were they, as you came close to delivering something, okay, now let's make them talk?
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
It just depends on what was coming down the pike.
Right.
And how it would work within what you were dealing with before.
Right.
Used to be out there that we developed everything ourselves, and then we started, you know, outsourcing it and buying commercially. So, and that became a big headache because you don't know who is developing it.
Right.
So, you know, you have your acquisition security stuff. So when somebody comes in and says, well, I need this software, and it takes 6 months to get it through the process because they have to check it out because it's not being developed in-house anymore. It was outsourced, and we're doing, you know, the commercially available off the shelf.
Did those cost more because of the time and effort rather than building it yourself? Which one would you prefer?
Which would I prefer?
Sure. For those contractors out there listening, pay close attention because this may be an opportunity.
Depends on how fast you need it.
Okay.
I mean, in the old days, it was nice to just go and tell somebody in T Group, I need this product.
Right.
So give me somebody that'll work on it. But, you know, that's not realistic anymore. So when you have to buy commercially off the shelf, unfortunately, you have to jump through so many hoops and processes now that it takes forever. And you have the finance division breathing down your neck, looking at outlays on your contract. Mm-hmm. And if you don't use that money right now, they're going to pull your funding. So you have a double-edged sword. It really is a double-edged sword.
Mary Ostman, 30-year veteran of the Department of Defense, now spending her time tanning at the pool.
I am.
And enjoying.
And it's 38
sports.
Years.
38, 30 yes. plus. How's that? 38 years in the same role. I can't even imagine. I'm just.
I wasn't a COR the whole time.
Well, at the same company. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Within the same company. That's unheard of these days.
Well, there's a lot of us out there that were out there for a long time. You got to get that 30 and 55.
Oh, my gosh. Do you miss it?
I miss the people.
I can tell you, I wish that I had an opportunity to work with you. I met you after you retired.
Right.
And your reputation definitely precedes you. And it's a very good one. I've mentioned your name to a few people like, oh, I went to a Caps game with Mary last night. And they look at me like, oh, Mary? You mean, Mary? And they hold their hands up like, really tall Mary?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, like, you know her? And I'm like, yeah, look, I've been texting her, as you can see. But people love you. And miss you.
Well, that's because I was straight arrow.
Yeah.
Man, I told it like it was. I did not. Well, I still do. You know that.
Oh, well, of course. Of course.
But it's just, you got to be firm. You got to speak your mind. And as long as everybody knew where they stood with you, they were willing to work with you. And I firmly believe that. I've believed it all my life. And that's how I ran my business in there.
Would you ever consider being a consultant for that?
Oh, absolutely.
Going back?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So if you're listening, Department of Defense, Mary Ostman, you're paying her pension right now. She would be happy.
That was my pension I earned. Okay?
Okay, she earned it. I apologize. I apologize. She did earn this pension. And she would be willing to come back and consult with the quote-unquote old school ways, the ways that worked.
Yeah,
right?
But I don't know if I'd want to go back to NSA. I'd want to go to the higher-ups downtown.
Really?
And yeah, because DOD encompasses a lot of places that do a lot of things. I don't build ships. I don't build aircraft.
Yeah.
NSA doesn't do that. They have a whole separate mission. And sometimes the rules and regulations that they do knee-jerk reactions on really affect us.
Rules, you brought it up. Rules and regulations, the president's, with the signing of a pen, can change your day.
Absolutely.
One way or another. Give me an example of a good way and a bad way.
Well, the CRA. Top, every year we look at it. Every year we know we're not going to get a budget on 1 October. I don't understand it. Me personally, I think they should cut out these different colors of money. We should be given a pot. IAD, you get this. T Group, you get that. You know, here is your money. We have a lot of smart people at NSA.
Yeah.
They have degrees. They've done the financial stuff. They know how to balance a checkbook. And they also know what operations are. So you never know what's going to happen next day that you have to change that course of what you had that money slated for to cover something that comes up. They should give me a checkbook and let me run it.
I think they should do just that, like tomorrow.
If you're doing it on a daily basis at home, what's the difference? You just add a couple more zeros behind the numbers.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I know what I needed to complete my mission, because all these people that I did requirements actions for came and told me what they wanted. So let's sit down and figure it out. Don't tell me I have to do cost plus because I can't control my costs. Let me do it the way it needs to be done in order to complete the mission. That is it for me. I have a mission that I have to complete. And that was it for me.
You can either help me or not.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I'll stay within the boundaries of the law.
Interesting.
That's not a hard concept.
No. But apparently it is for some.
They make it harder than it needs to be. I think they overthink a lot of things. I think they're so busy looking for the person that's trying to steal from the government or something that they're losing sight of the mission. Let's get back to this. You know, I don't care how fast I outlay that money. You gave me that money. O&M money is good for a year, but I got 5 years to outlay it. So who cares when it's outlaid? Only because you have to go back downtown to justify your funds. And if you haven't outlaid them, they're not going to give you your money. It's a game. I get it. But in contracting, you have to understand it's not like buying a refrigerator on your Best Buy credit card. You give me the money for my refrigerator. I put it on my credit card, and when the bill comes in, I take all that money, and it goes out of my account. That's not how contracting works. I'm supposed to give you what it's going to cost me for the next 12 months to have people covering that job, and I can't be billed for them until they've actually worked. So here we go, people. Let's use common sense again. It's going to take me 12 to 14 months to outlay that money. So don't keep coming to me month after month saying, well, why haven't you outlaid that money?
Work hasn't been done. People haven't been there
Correct.
To do it. How can I spend it
Correct.
All? Correct. I got it. Look at that. I picked up on that right away. That was pretty easy.
But that's some of the issues I'm trying to, you know, they're small issues.
Right.
But it makes our job so much harder.
Mary, this has been incredibly enlightening. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day.
I know my chair's waiting
to talk to me about this. Would you be willing from time to time just to talk? Let's say I get some other people in here, and maybe a round table of sorts to discuss
issues. That'd be a lot of fun.
Anybody that you really hated that I could bring in that we could debate? No, I'm just kidding.
You really don't want to go there. I don't hate anybody. I hate everybody equally.
Mary Ostman, former contracting officer, COR with the Department of Defense, 38 years under her belt, and now she's enjoying retirement as well she should. Mary, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Columbia Technology Partners is a service-disabled veteran, woman-owned small business based in Columbia, Maryland. Specializing in systems integration, security, mobile, and cloud development, we are here to meet your needs. Call us at 410-290-3280. Or check us out online at ctp-web.com. That wraps up this edition of Columbia Technology Partners Ready to Prime, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Alan Scott, and thank you for listening.
engineers are creating tiny nanoparticles that could have a big effect on acne. The root cause of acne is too much oil in pores of your skin. So Samir Mitragotri, a University of California engineer, has designed very tiny gold particles that can
go to the source of the problem, which usually is deep in the glands.
In what he says is a medical first, Mitragotri is using ultrasound to push the nanoparticles from the skin surface down to those oil-producing glands. Then,
when you shine laser on them, they get pretty hot and they can deactivate the tissue in the surrounding area.
The effect is so localized that Mitragotri doesn't expect the side effects common with other treatments for severe acne. He says early clinical trials are promising. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The FBI is offering a reward of up to $20,000 for information about the person responsible for the suspicious death of an Arizona teenager. Adrian Celeste Salinas was reported missing on Father's Day, July 16, 2013. Adrian's father, Rick Salinas.
Adrian was a young girl that was very beautiful inside and out. She deserves justice.
The morning before Adrian disappeared, she arranged for a cab to meet her at the AM/PM convenience store, which was a couple of blocks away from her North Tempe home to take her to a friend's house. But as Tempe Police Homicide Detective Alan Akey says, Adrian did not show up at the store.
We're trying to find out what happened to her between 4:43 and 5:07 when her phone shut off.
FBI Special Agent Carrie Cooper.
The FBI is assisting the Tempe Police Department in every way possible.
If you have information about this case, contact the FBI or the Tempe Police Department. With Wanted by the FBI, I'm Molly Halpern of the Bureau.
Start your workday with Federal News Radio and get the information you need from the journalists you trust. Join the Federal Drive with Tom Temin weekday morning 6 to 8, followed by In Depth with Francis Rose 8 to 10. Headline news every 15 minutes, morning and afternoons, plus insight and analysis on the most important and developing federal stories of the day. Experience the difference. Mornings on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.